All right, it's time for the real deal with Orbert Davis, our magical hour. Actually, listen, listen, listen. Keep the music going. Listen, listen. You hear that beat? Yeah, we hear that every week. But did you know? Kobe Watkins on drums. And right now in the studio, Kobe Watkins sitting in with me. Welcome, Kobe.
Hey, Orbert. How are you, big brother?
Oh, man. I am just so excited to have you here because that recording was over 10 years ago, I think, right? The real deal.
Yes, 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 yes.
Oh, my. When you lived in Chicago.
Oh, yes.
And so Kobe's been gone from Chicago for about 10 years. And man, we miss you, man.
Thank you. Thank you. And I had just gotten those drums. And the Sonar drums are on there. Roger, I know you know. And so I was like, I literally, because I was cleaning out my garage, so I went back and started listening to that twice.
Cool.
Twice in November and twice in December. I know specifically.
Yeah.
What, so it's like, I was like, ooh. It's like, man, wait a minute.
You're kicking.
I was like, this is a good.
You're kicking.
It's so crazy. So here we are now talking about it.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming, man.
Thank you.
I just want to talk all things Kobe, all things jazz.
Oh, and thank you.
Got to catch up. You know, we resisted the urge to talk before record button was hit so we can get it all for the show. But what you been doing, man?
I have been learning and been taking what I learned and learning some more of that and then teaching it to, I got two small boys,
oh, wow.
KJ, Kobe Jr. and Cameron. And then,
old?
Of course, okay, so KJ, he's five.
Okay.
And he's animated. Oh my goodness, we just went to his first Christmas concert and it was animated. He knew all the moves. They did last year's Frozen, or I'm sorry, 2017's Frozen. They did the... They did like a skit from when Olaf sang. And so they did the Olaf, and he had this thing, and he was like, he danced, and I did a preview of it at home. I think I only sent it to a friend of mine. I didn't put it on Instagram. No, I normally do. But he's so amazing. Like, he memorizes things. His mind is like, it's amazing.
Okay, so this is crazy for me because I've never known Kobe the dad. See, and 10 years ago, we were talking about, man, Clifford Brown and Max Roach, which still is pertinent.
Not KJ.
KJ. But that's cool. But man, so you're living where now?
I live in North Carolina, Durham, North Carolina.
Durham, North Carolina.
Yes. Yeah, and it's great. I was in Idaho for a few years, 2 years specifically.
Yeah.
And then things changed.
Sure.
Things changed. And then we moved back to North Carolina because I was... Literally, it was like a whole thing. Like, I moved out of Chicago, moved to Jersey, lived in Jersey for 2 years, moved to North Carolina, got married, then we moved to Idaho, then back to Idaho.
And so Idaho to teach.
Idaho to teach.
Right. And it was a public school.
It was a performing and visual arts school.
High school.
It was middle to high school. So 6th to 12th grade.
Yeah, because most jazz musicians made those major moves to teach at a university.
Yes.
So what was your decision?
The decision was, it's a 50-50, to be honest. It was a 50-50% decision in hindsight.
Okay.
So when I made the decision, I was like, oh, we get to move somewhere. We get to be by ourselves, talking about my wife and I.
Yeah.
And that was one of the big things. Like, oh, we get to be away from, you know, your sister lives here, but now it's just you and I. We have to rely on one another.
Nothing against the sister who's listening right now. Hey, sister, it's okay. Don't take it personally.
Yes. She gets it. Hopefully.
But she's probably saying, good, they gone.
Right. It was her little sister.
Okay.
So you know how big sisters to little sisters can be.
Right.
So it was good for her, for Allison to like, step away and say, hey, this is my husband. We're going to do this, live this, these first 2 years away and have this, you know, family, just us figuring out each other.
That's
and that was really, really good. And that was part of the major decision. Otherwise, we couldn't do it. I couldn't move. I wasn't able to thrive because I was moving, 2,000 miles across the country and then still leaving to go tour. At that time.
Yeah.
And I was touring a lot.
Yeah, you were with Kurt Elling then.
I was Kurt Elling and Sonny at the same time.
Sonny. Oh, wow.
And so it was like...
Sonny Rollins.
It's Sonny Rollins. And finishing with Kurt, and then it was Sonny. So it was like 2009. It was the ending of Kurt Elling's, my tenure with him. And I had been with him off and on from 2005 to 2009.
That's right.
So then it was full on Sonny Rollins. And so that was just like... I was in and I was out. He had like, that time he was like seasonal traveling.
Sure.
So there was a fall season, There was a spring season. There was a summer season.
So what happened when they overlapped? Because I think some of our listeners and students need to hear that. Sometimes there's conflict.
No, it was weird.
No scheduling.
That did not come. We did not because it was a situation where, when I say on and off, in and out, I was like a 10-year in and out with Kurt because he was also experiencing new drummers because he had just also moved to New York. So
he was
wanting to try.
Yeah.
And then I was available. So there were slots
that I
could fill. And I was like, it was really a blessing because it was like, oh, I moved to Jersey by myself and I had no gig per se. So between Kurt Elling and Sonny Rollins was like pain for things.
Wow.
And scheduling and making things happen in that respect. So I was like, oh, and no children at that point.
Yeah.
So then moved to North Carolina and I was still, you know, able to travel with Sonny Rollins. And then it was it was good. It was a great experience. I paid for my wedding without having to take it out alone.
Oh, there you go.
Really, really, really like.
All right.
Right.
So we have to remind or tell the audience that, okay, my relationship with Kobe, he's like a little brother to me.
Yes.
You know? So when you first came to Chicago, I think we hooked up pretty much right away.
Mm-hmm. I came on the scene. We did something with Ken Cheney.
Ken Cheney with the Jazz Institute.
And that's when our first thing happened,
yeah.
our first rehearsal. And then it just,
I remember that.
And it connected.
Yeah.
And my thought, so having Ken there and then you, and I'm like, oh, you had children and you're doing this. And my first thought was like, well, I have to do that. Because you had both your girls there.
Yeah.
And they're like,
old at the rehearsal.
It was like, how old was, so Zoe was old enough. She was walking around a bit.
Yeah. So she was probably around 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
And Sydney was in the car seat.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, is that something? And fast forward to today, yes, I've had to do that.
Right.
Like I was in a recording studio, set my drums up. Cameron was in the car seat.
Yeah.
And guess who I thought about? Orbert Davis. I was like, I know exactly where this is. And KJ was running around
and
figuring
it
out. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is that day
at
Chicago State University.
Because
that's where that rehearsal was.
That's right. But then also, when we first started, you pretty much jumped right into our education program.
Yeah.
Because I have so many memories of you in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
I think a couple summers we taught together at a couple schools.
Yes.
We would carry all those buckets in, the drum line.
And you teach these boys. So you came up with this vision, this amazing vision, and I literally used these tools.
Take it.
The tools of teaching or lecturing, giving live tools to children, these children. If you want to be in music, if you don't want to be in music, but you still need live tools, you still need to hear how to be an individual in society without all the other things that you think you need to be or whatever. So this etiquette class, this etiquette component of learning how to also play music was such an essential component. Etiquette for the audience, etiquette like learning how to sit at the table with others, learning what certain words meant.
Yeah. Respect was a good one.
Respect was one of those words.
Respecting
temperance
yourself.
Was one of those. Temperance. There was
just listening was a big part. You know?
And so boys and girls learning these etiquette, these life tools, having these life tools were really. And so, I could jump into that because that's important to me. Like, so, yes.
Yeah.
And so I would, even today, as I teach big band, there's a big band that I teach weekly, and I take time and I go, hey, you know, this music is not just XYZ, but it's also, and it's literally, I take maybe 2 or 3 minutes, and throughout the entire rehearsal, because the rehearsal is from like 1:30 to 3:30, there's probably a 5-minute total time where I'm like having mentor time with these students.
Excellent.
Because the music's not just about notes. It's not just about listening to, but they want to hear things that's going to help them in life.
Cool.
And if you're not giving them that, then what are we giving them?
There you go.
So,
wow. But listeners, real
deal
listeners.
That's why I got that from you. No. This is right?
You know, it's all about planting seeds.
Yes.
You know, and you get to harvest it and we'll carry it on and move it forward.
So guess what your first seed was that you gave me?
Uh-oh.
Check this out.
Okay.
Purpose-driven life.
Oh, that's right.
That seed was the book. I'll tell you exactly how I got. So we were at a gig at, I forget the name of that museum. It's on the corner off of Michigan Avenue. What's the busy street? Lakeshore Drive.
Maybe it is
Michigan Avenue. And anyway,
Art Institute. Yeah.
So we had a gig there, and so I was there already on time, thank God. So I'm punctual. And so I was away or something. I have to have snacks before I eat. So I know I was somewhere getting some snacks, some food. I came back. He was like, "Hey, I got you something. It's on your seat." And as soon as I walk in, there's this book, Purpose Driven Life.
Right.
That, after reading that, then I went and got Understanding Your Full Potential by Miles Monroe.
Okay.
All these inspirational books. Yeah. And then there was Paulo Coelho's Alchemist.
Oh, wow.
And those three books
were
the turning point for how I thought and how I'm thinking as inspirational thinking.
Exactly.
Like, those are like key and all the elements and all the things that are in those. So even now, that's how I think. Like,
excellent. Yeah. But we talked a lot.
Yes.
You know, and just about life is more than just music.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Awesome. But speaking of music, I've been following your career, of course, and listeners to Real Deal are no stranger to your music. So your first album was called Involved.
Yes.
All right. And that, again, oh man, we could play anything. But let's focus on one piece.
Mm-hmm.
You name it.
Third Pew.
Yeah, that's the one. And the reason I say that, because it's speaking of inspirational, you in church.
I'm from the church. And you know what? It's so real now. Real deal. It is so real. He did not prompt me on this yet.
Okay.
It is so real. Like, because the music that we play, this jazz music that we play, this black classical music that we play, there's an affect, an infection that comes with it, that comes from the church.
Most of
that. Really, you can't teach.
No.
And
it's an experience.
It's an experience. Right. And those who know and feel that experience when they play their instrument, you hear it come out that way.
Well, let's
But
let's
they can't it. Name it.
That's right. Okay. Well, Kobe's going to take us to church, and we're going to sit on the third pew. Yeah. Here's third pew, Kobe Watkins. right. Man, that's like Baptist church there. So how do you approach your musicians to learn that style?
Great question, because that was recorded with musicians from Chicago. Yeah. So now I'm not playing particularly specifically with the cats from Chicago. And it's funny because some of those cats, they were from church, like
guys you grew up with,
like James Austin. He's a pastor's kid, grew up in church. So I was James, I want Pentecostal organ on that.
And he's like this, boom. Right.
I specifically said those words. I was like, I want these stops pulled out on the organ. It's just like, I need it to sing. So I'm really particular about sounds too, but that's a whole nother. God bless my dad. That's his fault because, but approach how I, because that's really, really important. I mean, I hate to go back, but again, that was important how you and Ken Chaney and Bethany Pickens and Bobby Broom and Ryan Cohen, these mentors for me as a side man, I learned things that needed to happen within the blueprint and how you guys were hearing and seeing the vision of music. So, which was really something that I was like, oh, I need to take that and add that to how I think.
Right.
Like how that context of like being particular about certain things and how you wanted to play it and when you wanted to play, that's really important because that's not just a you all thing. No, that's literally the music.
Exactly.
You know, everybody in music, Duke Ellington, Count Basie, everybody were looking for a specific thing. And if you couldn't do it, then you couldn't play in that band, which is fine. That didn't mean you couldn't play an instrument.
Right.
So
So
as I'm with my musicians and the guys that I pick, which was a careful, very careful and very special thing, because I look for potential first. Yeah. I don't look for, oh, he's got it.
Right.
No, I look for potential. Like, what does he sound like? What can happen if we just played together as a duo?
It gives you room.
It gives,
to grow.
And like, do they embody the spirit of music?
Yeah.
And so there's a couple of guys in the band where they've been, their family, it's just like, I get goosebumps because of their mom, Elaine, she's like this incredible sight reader.
Oh, wow.
And I
pianist?
Was just a pianist.
Yeah.
And she would sit there and play when I was living in Eagle, Idaho, doing the performing visual arts school. Mm-hmm. She would come in and accompany. I'm like, Elaine, you are an amazing musician.
Wow.
But then I hear her sons play, the Nielsens, and they're like these amazing cats with all this music.
And what do they play?
Okay, so Justin, he plays piano.
Okay.
I mean, it levitates when he plays, literally levitates. It's a whole nother different thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is an Idaho? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's an Idaho. It's like, it's a kept secret. It's a hidden jewel. Yeah. And I'm like, you guys. And then there's Ryan Nielsen also. He's a trumpet player.
Yeah.
But both of them play a lot of piano. Ryan plays, he's a trumpeter. He's got his doctorate, it's just like, his piano player, he'll sit there and he'll read some, and it's like, wait, there's a whole nother different thing here.
And
he's
that comes
like,
out. That comes
and,
out.
And you guys, and so I told their mom one day, we're sitting in the kitchen, I call her my mom.
Right.
When I'm there in Rexburg and I'm hanging out with Mom Elaine, I'm like, Mom, you know you're my mom. And she's like, you're my fifth son. It's not even a thing. And so I said, these boys need to be on tour.
Mm.
I just said it just like that. I was like, you guys, you need to be out.
And are they much younger than you?
They are, no. So Justin is 43.
Okay.
I think he's the same age as my brother,
uh-huh.
which he's my brother. I'm sorry. He's the same age as Asa, the one in L.A. And then Ryan is 41. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So no, we're like peers. It's like growing up in the house with these cats, you know?
Yeah.
And then you got Aaron. He's 38. 38 or 39, and then John, who's the youngest, but oh my goodness, tenor saxophone player, and my goodness. I'm like, really? And John and I, we get into some stuff where you could just like...
You just let it go.
Just
let it go. And what happens just happens.
Yes.
Train and Elvin.
Yeah. and it just goes all of these different places and scopes and things,
that's
and
it's
like...
supposed to do.
And but these guys, they came with energy, spirit, and the love for music.
Excellent.
Not just
yeah
this particular swing style or this particular tradition. And that's really important. So when working with them and working to play songs that I've composed, I'm particular about certain things in the composition, but I'm also hoping that they have something to bring to this particular thing. And so there were certain things like, there's a song on the Movement album called Catch This. And I was like, which for me goes back to Chicago. Right. Because there's this subtlety in a Latin feel that can consist, and people can just dance. Like you can dance. But then after a while, then it goes to this big salsa thing where now the turns get way more aggressive and people are ready. It's like the streets open to this full thing. And it's like, I'm like, I remember going to these clubs, to these like salsa clubs and like hanging out and eating like bean tacos afterwards. I'm like, no, this is what. So it needs to have this temperance and this, the fire needs to be lit, but it doesn't have to be big fire. Exactly. It just has to burn.
Yeah. When I first listened to Movement, I felt that maturity. I said, man, who are these guys? Well, since you just set it up, we need to play it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, which track is that?
Do Catch This. Catch This. This is a Chicago. This is where my roots really, like, come into play as far as on the Latin side of Chicago.
All right. This is The Real Deal with Orbert Davis, sitting in with Kobe Watkins. And this is Catch This. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is The Real Deal with Orbert Davis, and I'm Kobe Watkins.
Well, you could have said, this is The Real Deal with Kobe Watkins, and Orbert's with me. But anyway, we just sitting in, man. So what was that tune?
So that was Catch This. That Catch This is an amazing tune. Like I said, it's from my Chicago days of going to the Latin clubs late at night and dancing and feeling the fire at a low temperature. And then all of a sudden goes into this mambo salsa and everybody's dancing. Feels like everybody's in the street just dancing.
That's Chicago.
So it's... And we were in a club. It was just like, yeah. At some point, there was a club that had 3 levels of salsa music.
Wow.
I was like, whoa. Because, you know, when you're young, there's a level of like this testosterone and like this, you're going to a party. And I was just like, for me, it was just always about like that music and like, man, what are they playing?
But it was also at 4 a.m. usually, too.
Yeah. That's when it ended. was when it ended. Oh, and it's like, you go home and you get up. I didn't have any children. Yeah. And so you get up. Yeah. And you just like, you go, you're like, oh, okay, let's have some eggs or some pancakes or something. Because it was me and my brothers, thank God, we were just kind of, we were hanging out.
My salsa days ended early when I started studio work. Because I tried that one night and to get up at 8 o'clock for a session.
Now, speaking of that, playing late at night now at 44, and I hadn't done it in a while, and I did a late gig, starts at 9. And I still do it now. But I've caught up now.
Yeah.
But that first time getting back to the 9 to 11:30, and we play. This cat named Brian Horton. Uh-huh. The night will get you.
Well,
if you don't play all the time like that.
When you play like Kobe Watkins, that's a whole other thing, man. Come on. Have you ever not played with 2 things? With low energy or with your mouth not being wide open?
Yeah. And sweating.
And
sweating, like now it's like sweat. It's like,
man,
it's on.
You're intense, man.
From the first beat, because he starts that thing and it's on. And it's on. Like, and so the night, if I'm not ready or if I wasn't ready that first time, I was in shape.
Yeah.
Because playing at that time of night, that instrument will talk back to you and say, nope, that's not it.
It will beat
that's
you. Not,
it will beat you down.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'll never forget, I had a long conversation with Freddie White, drummer for Earth, Wind & Fire. And we sat for 3 hours. And he said, hey, all those shows were about was trumpet and drums. He said, it's a test. How you doing? Because both of those instruments will beat you up.
Yes. Yes. So, man, it was 4 o'clock when those salsa gigs were in. And we'd be, you know, sitting down at a restaurant. And sometimes we'd talk about, like, what the music was or where it was coming from. So just so happened, I was also playing with this guy, Tito Corello, an amazing trumpet player. And I think he still teaches at
U of I. Champaign, director of trumpet. Yeah.
Such an amazing cat. Just aside from his trumpet playing, again, let's go back to the person.
Yeah.
He's
a family man.
A great family man. And again, another mentor that I gleaned to is like, he was like, he's making sure his family. So he was really good to hang with him because he talked about that groove, the bomba. And that's sort of what Catch This has, or I tried to capture that bomba. But the bomba, there are 26 or 42, which is kind of the same thing if you're a marathon runner.
Right.
It's like 42 different bombas. As I studied later on. And I was like, really? It's a lot of them. So it's different permutations of a bomba.
Okay.
And this is something I learned. So what you're getting is like a very minuscule fraction of the bomba that I'm playing on Catch This.
That's cool. That's the joy of creating music.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of creating music, I have to go back and thank you. You were a major part of my development because... you know, we did a lot of small group things. But then when I started writing for orchestra, you were a part of that. We did Concerto for Jazz Quintet and Orchestra with Chicago Sinfonietta.
Yes.
And there was another one, too, the one before that. But I just remember, you know, it was like a different world bringing this jazz group in the middle of this orchestra. And, you know, there was some issues there. But
yeah, it's supposed to
we
be.
We were solid, though.
Yeah, it was growth. It's called
really
growth.
Pushed it along.
Yeah.
But it was interesting, though. you also were part of the very first concert of Chicago Jazz Philharmonic.
That's right.
At the Jazz Festival.
That's right.
And that
That's
was right. that was history, man.
That was history. My that dad was able to, to be there. And Allison and I were dating. So that was still historic. And she talks about that.
Oh, man.
My wife talks about that today. Yeah. She was like, yeah, I was able to hang out with you and your dad at that concert. And
I was like, my goodness. Well, Mark Ingram always tells a story, our producer. He says that he was in the audience and people are like looking around like, what in the world is going to happen now? Because it was a 60-piece orchestra at a jazz festival. You know,
could not touch it.
But you
broke.
But you brought the swing, though, man. When it starts swinging, everybody's like, okay, all right. Yeah, yeah.
You know what I thought? So I think about this, Orbert, on so many levels. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to church. You have to be able to swing at a volume that the person in row and way in the back can still feel
it.
But the people up here are not like deafened by the sound.
Check that out.
How directional can you, and I used to question myself, how directional can that beat be? Mm. Can that person back there? I never talked about that out loud.
That's deep.
But because I used to play in church, and my dad, it goes back to my dad, like, you need to be able to play for a large group of people, and everybody from the front to the back needs to feel that beat.
Feel it. Not just hear it, but feel it.
Feel that beat.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, so, man, I'm still like that today. I'm like, hey, it has to have intent.
Yeah.
That rhythm, that groove has to have intent. Everybody in the house, whether they're tapping their feet or not, they have to know it's there.
Okay.
Right. So.
Right. Wow. So let's talk about the future.
Yes.
Forecast. Where do you see yourself?
Okay, so I've already, believe it or not, we did a the Kobe Watkins version of the Philharmonic.
Really?
The CJ.
Nice.
We did that last year, 2019, February. We were commissioned to do, and John Armstrong, the tenor saxophone player, I literally sang orchestra parts.
Nice.
And sang it and sent it to him. And he orchestrated.
Did some
arranging.
Nice. How big was the orchestra then?
Everybody.
No, but how many pieces?
How many people were there on stage? 35,
nice.
40. Like the full string section, which is, I think, 17 or 20. What is that?
Whatever you want it
to be. No, it's right. Thing, so yeah. I had a full first and second violin section. Yeah. I had a full cello section of, I think that was one, two, three, four. I think it was six or it's like five or seven. It's five or seven or something like that. And then a viola section, full on viola section. I had four
double bass.
Yeah. I had
cello.
Cello. Yes, I had the full woodwind. So there was flute. There was a clarinet and bass clarinet and two bassoons.
Nice,
I had four trumpets, three trombones, one tuba, four.
Wow.
There was four French horns.
There you go.
Because there was parts in there that required.
Yeah.
So it was big. So we did Catch This for orchestra.
Nice.
The City.
Okay.
Which is a play on the different places that you go and you land and you just hear.
Yeah.
It's like this hero music or something. And so we did that with the orchestra.
I'll be later.
It's like boom, boom, it's like, oh my goodness, this is happening.
I feel responsible for that.
You are. No, you are. It's you. And then the other person that I was able to work with in the orchestra setting was Lawrence Hobgood, Kurt Elling, and Rob Amster. And remember,
you wrote those arrangements.
Oh, yes.
That's right.
Remember that? And so, yes, come on now.
Man, you guys, man. You toured with that. But
yes, we went to Australia.
Yeah, it was recorded, Melbourne Symphony.
Yes.
And Kurt was so cool because he sent me a copy of the program, and it had his name in big letters, and it had with arrangements by Orbert Davis on the cover. I'm like, man.
You guys
nailed it, man.
Smoking.
Yeah. You guys
nailed
it.
And to this day, what was the name of that tune? Nature Boy.
Nature Boy.
Millions of hits.
Yeah.
I'm like, people are like, you are a Nature Boy. Random people. You are a Nature Boy. You are on this. I was like, I was like, the rehearsal was kind of crazy, but yeah, right. It was good, you know. Yeah. But oh my goodness, I still remember that time because the playing of the late Rob Amster was amazing. Oh, man. It was just so solid.
You guys, that rhythm section,
that group.
Yeah, that was special.
But I still like the group with Frank Parker.
Oh yeah, oh, we gotta play some
Frank Parker, like
the Grover Washington tune,
the group
Limelight.
That's not bad. I still listen to that. Yeah. Oh my goodness! Yeah. If there's the one to play, play that.
That's the
Wine Light.
Okay, we'll play it.
Yes, the Coltrane tune. I think it was a Resolution because Kirk comes up with a great vocalese on that. Yeah. Oh, it's just
But Kirk's another one.
I hung out with some bad dudes.
That was
y'all
really
are bad.
But like, Kirk was cool because we had him sing with CJP, and he barely took a dime for it. So I just basically said, Kirk, man, I'm gonna give you everything I wrote here. I actually went through and did some more writing to fit because I know Lawrence wrote some special interlude things in Nature Boy. I think it was in Nature Boy. Mm-hmm. So I went through and said, what you doing? Let me reorchestrate it for that. That was cool.
So that I took pages, again, took from my mentors, took from the people that I was able to sideman with.
But that's why we do it. To continue it. It can't live in a vacuum.
And that's where, so the group chat's like, what are we doing next?
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I want to do some more orchestra.
Good.
Because the pieces are there. I wrote a piece.
Okay.
Alpha Involved. Affectious.
Okay.
That tune. Be-da-da, bo bo ba bo bo da bo da. And all I could think about was the strings from Motown. That's all I can think about when I was writing it. I'm like, ooh, I want some Motown.
That sounds like Bach to me, man.
No, it is. But with the chords behind, you know, because those, you know what those musicians were. You know, you worked with some of those people. And it's just like, so I wanted that feeling in that song to have them in and out and the colors of the string parts in there. So now, like technically now, I have a string orchestration book that I'm working on right now that I'm reading and going through orchestra because I've never done or never studied string orchestration. Hey. So it's really, really important that I get smart.
You got to do it. You got to listen. You got to listen to the classics.
Yeah.
And just, if possible, experiment. And get some players to say, and then you say, that doesn't sound good. So the best tool of the composer is the eraser.
Yes.
But you know, but I remember, I think I played at your, either your graduate recital or your senior.
Northwestern. Our alma mater, everybody. Right.
But I remember your producing that concert. It was amazing.
Thank you. And that's what I always, again, taken from like people just like, Hey, like production. Yeah. Production's big for me.
Yeah.
Like, how is it presented?
Exactly.
I took that away from Sonny Rollins. Like, how are we presenting ourselves? I mean, in the next scope of it.
Right.
Because you had it, and Kurt had it.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, how are we producing?
And Ryan. Right.
And Ryan specific. Yes.
Oh, man. Yeah.
So what's the production look like?
Yeah.
What are we saying?
Yeah.
How is it look? What does the marketing look like?
Right.
And so that's huge for me, but the music is also huge. But at today's time, you can't really have one without the other because presentation means a lot. That's like someone bringing you your food, your seafood. Right. Like it can't be any old thing, you know,
or
you're not going to eat it.
You're
right now I'm writing for this year's recording.
Excellent. Well, I can't wait to hear it. Then we'll have to have you back and we'll talk about it afterwards.
Awesome. Yes.
All right. Well, Kobe, thank you so much. I think later in the hour, we got to play some Kurt Elling. We got to play some Sonny Rollins in your honor.
Yes.
And
yes.
Bobby Brown.
Patanjali.
What's that?
Sonny Rollins, Patanjali.
You got it. You got it. Awesome. And also your work with Bobby Broom, man.
Yeah.
It swings so hard.
Thank you. Anything from The Way We Play.
The Way We Play.
That's been going. That's been a thing. I've been listening to. It's weird. I've been listening to all the old stuff and just been enjoying it, basically.
That's awesome. All right. Well, Kobe Watkins, thank you so much for sitting in with me in The Real Deal.
Thank you.
And we will do it again.
Thank you.
All right. Kick that beat in right now. We'll be right back. Wow, I can see why Colby wanted me to play some Sonny Rollins. That was smoking. That was called Patanjali with Sonny Rollins and Clifton Anderson on trombones, Chicagoans Bobby Broom and Colby Watkins. Hey, don't go too far because the third hour of The Real Deal is coming very, very soon. Roy Haynes, Steve Gadd, Mark Walker, Paul Werdekel, all drummers because we are going to continue to give the drummers some. And speaking of Art Blakey, I've got about 2 minutes to share something else with you. Here's the famous Miles Davis theme, Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers.
Applause. How about it now, everybody? Big hand for Art Blakey. Art Blakey.